Happy Friday, everyone. Thank you, first of all of you who have been supporting Into the Word financially. Thank you for taking care of that. I open an invitation to any of you that would like to assist to just write down the contact information you hear at the end of today's program. You can send your one-time or ongoing gift of any amount whatsoever to that address, and it will be applied to the radio broadcast fees. Fridays, I encourage you as strongly as I can, be an active participant in body life. Everyone should have a home church, and everyone should get into relationship with the other members of that church on a regular basis. You need to fellowship and worship and praise and pray and serve and sing and study and encourage to love and good deeds, all the things that are part of the church life. You've got to have a place where you engage that with other people. If you don't have a place like that, go out, find it, and get plugged in and stay plugged in there. If you're actively looking right now and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, please come check us out. Consider us as a potential for your home church. We are in Genesis chapter 16 today. We are really starting to develop the grand story of Abram, the father of faith. And we are looking at his 10th year in the promised land right now. Last session, we heard God make a covenant with Abram, that he would have seed from his own body, a son from his own body, that God would keep promises with, that the seed, both singular and collective, would inherit the land where the Canaanites are currently living. But it has to wait for a while, because the sins of the Canaanites, the Amorites, have not yet reached this level where God feels he has to put it down and evict the people from the land. Now, the people who are reading Genesis for the first time, the Israelis, they are actually living in the time where that's going to happen. In fact, they will be kind of the sheriffs of God's eviction notice, and then be taking over the property for their own purposes. But God had told Abram that his kids, his descendants, before they really inherited the promised land, would spend 400 years in a land not their own, that would be Egypt, but then after those four generations, they would be brought back by God to this promised land, and that judgment would fall on their enslaving country. And so all of that has already come to pass for the Israelis whenever they're reading this story for the first time from Moses. They've been brought out of the land of Egypt amidst great plagues, the 10 plagues, the Egyptians were punished, the Israelis were able to plunder them at God's direction, and now they're heading for the promised land after 430 years away. Chapter 16, God now has to deal with a bit of a hiccup in the inheritance scheme. One of the things that we should acknowledge is that while God is perfectly aware of all free will choices well before they happen, this is what is technically called omniscience, all-knowing, he still allows us to exercise that free will even when it's not a great idea. Apparently, God restrains from intervening except in those cases where free will choices will really mess up his overall plan. And so this is going to be one of those stories where God allows Abram and Sarai to make free will choices that are not good ideas and bring all sorts of bad consequences into existence. In fact, we're living, even to this day, underneath the impact of these free will choices. All of the tension in the Middle East right now is because of this story, the beginning of this story right here. Genesis chapter 16, verse 1. Now, Sarai, that's her Hebrew name as best I can pronounce it, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. Now, it's 10 years that they've been in Canaan. We don't know how long they'd been married before they entered Canaan. Abram was 75 when they entered Canaan, so he's now 85. And Sarai was 66 when she entered Canaan, which means she is now 76. So they may have been married for 20 or so years. But they have no kids. Abram was just having this conversation with God not too long before this. And God had told him, no, you will not be designating one of your servants' kids as your heir, Damascene Eleazar. You will have a physical son from your body, from your loins specifically, Abram. So Abram and Sarai still don't have any kids. And no doubt, Abram has had a conversation with Sarai about what God had said. And Sarai comes up with a plan. Now, she had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. Now, I'm guessing that this female servant came into their lives during that famine time they spent down in Egypt. That would make the most logical sense, why an Egyptian would be in their encampment. She has been there as a young woman to help Sarai with whatever it is that she needs to get done. She's not married. And so Sarai said to Abram, "Behold now, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children." Now you notice it was assumed by this couple, because Abram said this as well, that God is the reason why they can't have kids. That if he would just loosen it up, they'd be able to have kids, but he's not letting that happen. So Sarai says, God won't let me have kids, so why don't you do this? You go into my servant, Hagar, and it may be that I shall obtain children by her, or I'll be able to build up my heritage, my house, by using her. Now, what's happening here is that they've come out of an Egyptian, they've come out of a Mesopotamian culture. And in Mesopotamia, we know, around this time period, it was culturally acceptable that if you could not have children as a woman, that you could take another woman, a servant of yours, an employee, if you will, and marry her as a secondary wife to your husband. And you'd still have control over her life, because she'd be like a junior wife, a concubine, if you will. And when she gets pregnant, she's basically functioning as your surrogate. See, nowadays we do in vitro, right? But back at this time, it had to be all done by completely natural means, not scientific methods. So she would get pregnant by the husband, and the baby inside would legally belong to the senior wife. In fact, there's even a cultural tradition that when the time for the baby to be born happened, the surrogate would sit on the lap of the legal wife, and the baby would be delivered between the knees of both of them, and therefore the legal wife would be kind of participating in the birth. It would be like she was the mom. And then the baby would be raised as the legal child of the legal wife, the senior wife, and the surrogate mom would kind of function in a way as a nanny. It would be, in effect, the baby would have two moms because of this very close relationship here. But that's what Sarai is recommending to Abram. Because remember, Abram said, God told me that I would have a child from my own loins. So Sarai says, well, let's help him out. Let's get you involved with a second wife, a concubine, and get a baby for us both. Now, the next line in Genesis 16 says, and Abraham listened to the voice of Sarai. Now, the last time we saw something like that, it was when God was chiding Adam for listening to the voice of his wife, Eve, and eating of that forbidden fruit. Abraham does not check in with God, you notice. He apparently just goes, you know what? Sounds like a good plan. Sounds like it would fit into God's will. But let's be honest, everyone. That was not what God had in mind. And that becomes obvious later. So we have two people who love God, love each other. They want children. And so they come up with a plan that they think is a way to answer their own prayers. But it wasn't what God had intended. But God lets it happen anyway. So this was the warning I was giving you earlier, is that God sometimes allows our free will choices to go forward, even though they're going to bring about some troublesome consequences. And most certainly, the story of the story of Ishmael and Isaac and all of the trouble that has happened between their two groups of descendants has been an ongoing problem. Verse number 3. So, after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, so there's where we have our chronological tie-in, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian, her servant, gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. So there is a legality that is happening here. Now, this does not change God's original intention. It goes against it. God's original intention, one man, one woman, together for a lifetime. That was the goal. That was the intention. That's the ideal. But here, this couple, falling back on some Mesopotamian customs and laws, says, well, in this extremity of situation, Abram can have a secondary wife. So he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. Now, more than likely, Hagar is not going to be a full-fledged wife to Abram with continuing rights and privileges. She is, in effect, a junior wife or a concubine, and her life is under the control of the senior wife, Sarai. But she reaches the point which they'd agreed upon, which she would become the surrogate mother of a baby. She's pregnant. But now that she's pregnant, she gets kind of full of herself. And she treats Sarai with contempt. I can get pregnant and you can't. I'm carrying the heir of our master, our husband, which you couldn't get done, that sort of thing. There's another passage of Scripture that I think is similar to this. It's the story that you see Samuel, the story of Samuel's mom, how his mom was a wife that had a secondary wife that had kids, and she didn't have any. And the other wife mocked her, made fun of her because she couldn't have kids. And so I think that's a little bit of what's going on here. And Sarai, she's not happy. She said to Abram, "May the wrong done to me be on you." In other words, this is your fault. Now that is very interesting family dynamics here, isn't it? Because who was it that suggested the surrogacy? Correct, it was Sarai. But Abram went along with it, which makes it his responsibility, because that's the way God set it up in the family. He is the senior of the two partners, and so when he makes the choice, anything that comes out of it is his responsibility. So she blames him that this is happening, that this is going sideways. "I gave my servant to your embrace. When she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me." In other words, God deal with you if you don't deal with this. That's basically what she's wanting. She wants Abram to come down hard on Hagar. Verse 6, "But Abram said to Sarai, 'Behold, your servant is in your power.'" She's in your hand. The chain of command in this tent city is that she's the junior wife. She came as your servant into this situation. So you should take care of it. So he basically says, "I don't want anything to do with this. You deal with it. Do to her as you please." And so Sarai dealt harshly with her. Now, I don't know for sure what it was that she did to deal with her harshly. My guess is that in the women's side of the encampment, there were lots and lots of things to do, lots and lots of jobs. And Sarai would be the one assigning these jobs. And so I'm guessing that she may have given her junior surrogate wife servant the bad jobs, the garbage jobs, the jobs that were nasty. Eventually, we are told she fled from her. So Sarai pushes her buttons enough that the mother of Abram's son runs away. Where's she going? Probably back to Egypt. The angel of He Who Is, so one of God's angels, found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring that was on the way to Shur. Now, we know from other passages of Scripture that Shur is located east of Egypt. It's on the way from Hebron, which is where this story is taking place, back to Egypt, back to the Delta. So it seems as if she's heading back to Egypt where she came from. She stopped for a rest next to a spring, and that's where the angel catches up with her and chides her. Verse 8, he said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from? Where are you going? Now, of course, the angel already knows because God gave him this assignment, and God knows. She said, I'm fleeing from my mistress Sarai. The angel of the Lord said to her, you need to return to your mistress and submit to her. So this is where I say he chides her, because this came about because she got too full of herself, thinking that she was better than Sarai, and she was pushing Sarai's buttons on purpose. And then Sarai started pushing back. So that's how all this happened. And so the angel basically tells her, you need to turn around, you need to go back to where you came from, and you need to fall back into the ranks. Submission is the idea of finding your place in the structure. And what's her place? Well, she was serving as a servant. And then she became a surrogate and a junior wife. So she needs to go back and get back into that role. Verse number 10. The angel of the Lord also said to her, I will surely multiply your offspring, your seed, so that they cannot be numbered for multitude. So here we kind of see how the blessings upon Abraham, or Abram at this time, get transferred to his seed, regardless of how those seed come into existence. This is not the seed of the promise. This is the seed that came about by a free will choice of Abram and Sarai, and Hagar, by the way, because she would have had to agree to this. The promise of God was your seed, Abram, are going to be multiplied. So God tells Hagar, your seed is going to have a lot of offspring himself. Verse number 11. The angel of the Lord said to her, behold, you are pregnant and shall bear a son. Now, she already knows she's pregnant, but knowing the gender is not something that can be done by scientific means back at this time. So this is divine information from God to her. You're going to have a baby boy. And you shall call his name Ishmael. Ishmael literally means God hears. Because he who is has listened to your affliction. So God knows that Sarai has been mean to Hagar. It's true that Hagar was pushing her buttons, but that was no justification for Sarai to be doing whatever it was to afflict her. So God tells Hagar, I know. What she was doing, I know what was happening to you. I'm well aware of it. I think there's an implication. I will take care of it if you will just trust me. That's going to become his name. God listens to you. God is hearing you. Verse 12, he shall be a wild donkey of a man. Now, what in the world does that mean? Well, a wild donkey was kind of used as a free spirit sort of expression. So somebody out in the wilderness, kind of a wilderness guy. And that does seem to describe what Ishmael is like when he gets older. Then it says, his hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him. Now, there is a Bedouin saying that says this, quote, I am against my brother and I are against my cousin and I are against the stranger. Or sometimes it's, I and my brother are against my cousin, I and my cousin are against the stranger, end quote. So the basically, you know, we are against anybody else if they're against whatever group we're of right now. And so apparently that culture came out of this genetic group that we're talking right here. So kind of rough and tumble. They're going to be out in deserts and things like that, and so they kind of take that lifestyle. And then we have this final thing, he shall dwell over against his kinsmen, meaning off to the east lands from his kinsmen. And so, after that prophecy, she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, you are a God of seeing. You're the God who sees me. For she said, truly here I have seen him who looks after me. So it's clear that she is adopting the one true God as her God as well. And therefore the well was called Beer, which means well, Lahai Roy, which means the living one who sees me. And it lies between Kadesh and Bered. And we will have those places mentioned in later stories.